Welcome to Reclaiming the Republic. This show is sponsored by ReclaimingTheRepublic.org. I am G.R. Mobley. This is an educational grassroots program focused on uniting and leading in restoring the Republic and placing the federal government back into the scope and framework of the Constitution once again. Welcome back. It is now or never. That debt is fraud. Please make your appeal to heaven as you learn, pray, but you have to act. We need people standing up. We need to interpose. We have to do our divine responsibility of holding people accountable in this life to the government that we've been blessed with. With that, your campaign begins now. You're already behind the eight ball. More importantly, on top of that, we need to be campaigning on holding people accountable. It's not about whether this person, you know, looks bad or, you know, you don't like them because of the car they drive. Whatever these little problems are, we need to put those aside. It all has to be focused on compliance to the Constitution. Imagine a world where the government actually invoked the supreme law of the land as it is written today. The problem is that 14th Amendment created the standard. Every person must actively support the Constitution. And if they fail to do so, they're no longer eligible. So if we, the people, actually had that law enforced, then everything changes. Everything changes, and it all changes for the good. Because bottom line, you don't have any middle ground. You don't have any compromise. The Constitution demands the deportation of every invader. And we've kind of talked about this in some detail. And I didn't actually get a chance, but I figured since you've had a little time to ruminate, what little time it's been, so Tammy, welcome back. And
thank you.
Does it make sense regarding the immigration issue? Because we do not have a proper immigration system. We don't.
No, so that's one of the things I was confused on. So the Constitution gives the government the authority to deport invaders.
Okay.
I'm just not sure where it sits. Like, do the states have the power to allow immigrants, or like?
So the states constitutionally have the power to establish their own migration. Now, technically, when we look at the United States having the control, because the Constitution in Article 1, Section 9, basically said the federal government would have to wait for 20 years after the Constitution is ratified, or up actually to 1808. So if it would have taken a year or two for the Constitution to be ratified like the Articles of Confederation, then they wouldn't have gotten 20 years, maybe 1918. But to 1808 was the hard date set where the federal government could then start regulating the importation of persons. In other words, people coming here, not immigrating into a state. Now, what is immigration? Immigration is when a person chooses to migrate into a given state. Now, we do not have a system that has been designed where the states actually have their own immigration policies. Because a long time ago, when the United States started to get overrun by a flood of immigrants, the federal government stepped up and said, hey, we're going to help you out here. We're going to do you a big favor. And we're going to control all these people. And the sick ones we'll send back. And blah, 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 blah. Well, they should never have done that. The states never should have let them do that. The states should have actually figured out a proper solution instead of allowing the federal government to control that unconstitutionally. So bottom line, when we look at the federal government having the control over the importation of persons and all things coming into the United States, if somebody is coming into the United States without a process, without registering a migration, So technically, let's look at what the states would need people to come into the United States for, into their state. They would need people for working, you know, like migrant workers, crop workers, you know, people to come up and work in the fields. The state should have the ability to actually allow people to come in and then go back out. Bottom line, they can't just stay there, because if if the United States, who has the authority to establish a uniform rule of naturalization, if in that law they stipulate that only immigrants, people that originally come here to actually be an immigrant, they want to become a citizen of your state, then they can become citizens of the United States. Anybody that comes here ignoring the laws of the states and the United States are considered illegal, are considered trespassers, would be considered an invader and must be removed. If a person comes here under the pretenses of one thing, like to be a migrant worker, and decides to stay, then they have violated the terms of why they're here, and it would be considered that they would then turn them, because by the obligation of them entering into this nation, they needed to return back to their home state or home nation. And if they didn't do that, then it would be perceived that they would then transition into becoming an invader. Therefore, they would need to be deported. And so the system would actually work, and it would allow the states to actually control those types of people that we want, the types of people that will help. You know, we're not here. We don't owe the world a handout. Every state has a right to be able to bolster itself and to help it go in the direction it wants to go. Unfortunately, some of these would have actually been like in the southern states after the importation. Maybe they would have just only imported white people or what have you. I believe that the paradigm today is that we need to bring the world's best, brightest, and those who are willing to even work. I mean, if you're willing to come and do what's necessary to claw your way, you know, through hard work, not through conniving and killing and those types of things, but to, you know, lawfully climb the ladder of success in America, then you should be able to come here. As we look, you know, I'm not the king, but I'm just telling you, if we actually had the table where every state was sitting at the table saying, well, this is how we want to do this. Of course, they would need to really figure out what they would want to do. And then they could sit down and say, well, this is going to be our immigration policy. And then they could work out, because the federal government does have a responsibility of, you know, ensuring only those people come into America that meet those policies. If by chance a state becomes, you know, antithetical and they want to be overran and they want to actually allow people to just run into their country and become an invader, that would be a violation of the Constitution. California is one of those states. Those people that have been in government in California allowing the borders to be open, they need to be held accountable. When we look at, you know, holding everybody accountable, it really cusps on that. And the fact is, we don't have a proper immigration system, because the federal government took it on and they've basically been stiff-arming every state down the road. And as a matter of fact, the federal government has been doing everything it can to actually create disadvantages for the states, especially the good states, and create disadvantages for the bad states by allowing illegals to go in there and then pouring federal dollars into those states. Oh, here's more assistance. Here's more housing for you. If you look at California, they've been building houses, which has been a huge plus up in the construction industry, the real estate industry, to accommodate all this huge demand for housing. Guess what's going to happen if we actually, you know, get rid of these invaders? There's going to be a glut of housing in California. What does that mean? What happens if you have an abundance of empty properties and homes? What happens in a state where you actually have, that's considered a buyer's market.
Yeah, I mean, prices are going to drop.
There you go. There you go. Now, it never really affects the ultra elite, right? I mean, the multi-million dollar mansions will always be a multi-million dollar. So who does it really hurt?
I mean, the middle class.
You
middle
and
class,
I.
The poor.
That's right. You and I. And those people who aren't in that opulent level. I mean, you could be living right now in a $1 million home in California and quickly find that that thing is only worth $250,000.
Yeah.
Folks, these are the realities of a, you know, what we call supply and demand market, the type of market we're supposed to have. But everybody has been controlling from the real estate, the construction, and everything else. We got to maintain this glut. We got to keep on growing because all of these guys that get paid to build homes, that made a living out of doing this. Look at America. When in America did building homes become this demanding profession? You know, creating plumbing and all of these things that we have now, these parasitical unions protecting supposedly the special labor. Do you see my point?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And there's been all of these people that have been protected by this evil deviation, this evil abomination against the Constitution. Everybody's benefiting. In other words, everybody is responsible for this problem. And, you know, there's blood on so many people's hands when we really look at the people who've been benefiting from this. They wouldn't want to tell you that. But the reality is the growth and the fact that we've been building and building and building and building housing. Now, I honestly think that if we get the invaders out and we actually have good immigration policies, these homes could actually, and we could probably restore an semblance of a decent housing market, a proper housing market. But when we have the federal government actually waging cultural and economic warfare against us by deliberately allowing people to overrun our borders, deliberately allowing that, you see the problem mm-hmm. that creates? Wow. I mean, it's just, it's hard to fathom. Okay, so we were on July 13th, and we had just finished reading this little part. I think I finished it, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so we're now on Mr. Butler, where I think you yesterday were, you know, thinking that that's where we're at. So we're on Mr. Butler and talking about the security of the southern states. So go ahead.
The security of the southern states want is that their Negroes may not be taken from them, which some gentlemen within or without doors have a very good mind to do. It was not supposed that North Carolina, South Carolina, and Georgia would have more people than all the other states, but many more relatively to the other states than they now have. The people and strength of America are evidently bearing southwardly and southwesterly.
Okay, so why is that? Why are people bearing that way, down to the south and to the west? Because that's where the open land is, for them to actually be able to do, you know, have an opportunity, right? Because that's where the free land was. America actually was a homesteading state or a homesteading nation. As the Western states started opening up, the states literally basically had homesteading laws. You know, if you can come out here and mark out the land and you can improve that land and improve that it is yours, because you're working the land, then it is yours. Many states still have homesteading laws. And I will bet you dollars to donuts, if the states actually revitalized their homestead laws, you would probably find people moving into some of these remote areas of the West and in the central states where energy, mining, you know, lumber, and those types of things might actually be, you know, so abundant that the people would actually be able to, you know, get a foot in and find a way of becoming productive and successful.
Where's that at?
Well, so when you look at Idaho, Montana, Washington, and I even think in Wyoming, you'll find, and going across and, you know, through the northern, the greater northwestern quadrant of the United States, there's an abundance of energy. There's an abundance of resources. It's precious metals and so forth. What do they call those? Rare metals? You know, we're mining. As a matter of fact, it was just disclosed. Where is this large repository of lithium in America? And as a matter of fact, you have heard this caldera that is under Yellowstone. Actually, there's a huge bubble under Casper. In other words, that caldera is much bigger than they actually thought it was. As we start getting better and better at being able to, you know, look through, because you heard about the discoveries with the pyramids, with this ground-penetrating radar, they were actually able to see these superstructure columns coming up underneath the pyramids to support them.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's crazy.
So what that means is that we're getting better and better at knowing what's underneath us, just like we're getting better and better at knowing what's in the universe. As our instruments can now see down into the molecular structure, practically, then we can understand these unknowns. We are coming close to being dangerously reckless in the realms of the Creator. From genetic engineering, you know, atomic engineering, and those types of things, we as a society and as a people, even with intelligence, are becoming recklessly close to destroying all of us at our own hands. I mean, how many times have we seen these futuristic societies where artificial intelligence takes over, right?
I mean, there's all kinds of movies about that.
Right, and some other movies, they don't dive into it, but like when you look at Star Trek or when you look at, you know, Star Wars or any of these types of things, you know, they basically, you know, somehow we survived, but boom, now we're, you know, populating the universe, whatever. But, I mean, they're just altruistic and futuristic, bottom line. We still have a lot of potential in the United States, especially in these interior states. The problem is the federal government is controlling every market to where they're dictating that instead of growing food in America, they're growing fuel, which is why ethanol and corn to make ethanol is being produced instead of feeding people. What they have literally done is they've demanded a consumption of these products to take away the ability to feed ourselves. They're devising strategies that are antithetical to our best interest. The federal government is literally playing the game that the globalists want to see America fall and crumble. So anyway... Mr. Wilson then responds to Mr. Butler. Okay, let's pick it up from him. Go ahead.
If the general declaration would satisfy any gentleman, he had no indisposition to declare his sentiments. Conceiving that all men, wherever placed, have equal rights, are equally entitled to confidence, he viewed without apprehension the period when a few states should contain the superior number of people. The majority of people, wherever found, ought, in all questions, to govern the minority. If the interior country should acquire this majority, it will not only have the right, but will avail themselves of it, whether we will or no. This jealousy misled the policy of Great Britain with regard to America. The fatal maxims espoused by her were that the colonies were growing too fast and that their growth must be stinted in time. What were the consequences? First, enmity on our part, then actual separation. Like consequences will result on the part of the interior settlements if like jealousy and policy be pursued on ours. Further, if numbers be not a proper rule, Why is not some better rule pointed out? No one has yet ventured to attempt it. Congress have never been able to discover a better. No state, as far as he had heard, has suggested any other. In 1783, after elaborate discussions of a measure of wealth, all were satisfied then, as they are now, that the rule of numbers does not differ much from the combined rule of numbers and wealth. Again, he could not agree that the property was the sole or the primary object of government and society. The cultivation and improvement of human mind was the most noble object. With respect to this object, as well as to their personal rights, numbers were surely the natural and precise measure of representation. And with respect to property, they could not vary much from the precise measure. In no point of view, however, could the establishment of numbers as the rule of representation in the first branch vary his opinion as to the impropriety of letting ambitious, not sure what that word is, principle into the second branch on the question to strike out wealth and to make the change as moved by Mr. Randolph. It passed in the affirmative.
Yeah, you're right. Vicious, spiteful, malicious. That's a vicious principle into the second branch. And so anyway, what they did was they basically voted and yay, yay, yay. Boom. It seemed like it carried. I mean, there was only one state that didn't vote yes in objects of this or in following that movement. So bottom line, he was actually making good sense. In other words, he was finally pointing out that, you know, how Britain was basically trying to manipulate America and how that actually backfired on them. We can't do the same thing. Mr. Wilson is absolutely making clear sense here. And so at this point, now we've actually completed that portion. So on July 14th, because they're about ready to adjourn, right? And then they come back, you know, and they basically, Mr. Martin calls the question on the whole report, including the parts relating to the origination of money bills and the equality of votes in the second branch. So you can see they've kind of settled on this first branch being based on population, representation of the people, and the second branch, representation of the legislature. So now they're going to discuss more about admitting new states and the sub-arguments that they have to get through to get there. Now, go ahead. We got less than a minute. So instead of going ahead, because I happened to glance at that, do you have any questions, ideas, or what do you think so far from what we've been reading? You know, you can tell that they're still struggling, right?
Yeah, I mean, I think it makes sense. Mm-hmm. Going off of numbers seems to be the most logical.
Right, and it seemed like in the last move, when we looked at what Mr. Wilson was doing, basically, on the question to strike out wealth and to make the change as moved by Mr. Randolph, it passed in almost a unanimous affirmative. In other words, basing it based wholly on persons, population. Mm-hmm. And so there was still this little problem of how are we going to differentiate what the South calls property and what the North doesn't call property, which is slavery. How are they going to deal with that? And again, it was already even brought up that the only defense that the Northern states had was the Senate. And so just to be very clear, folks, the suffrage in the Senate was for the state legislatures, not the people, that they were already affixed to the idea that the people were going to be represented in the first house, the big house, based on population. That was their suffrage. In the Senate, in the second house, that is where the state legislature would obtain their suffrage, their representation. Again, this is all a Republican form of government. These men were being led. Well, we'll be right back after this. If you've listened to my show, Reclaiming the Republic, then you should understand that the Constitution is neither a living document nor a noble guide to governance. In accordance to Article 7, the Constitution is a hard, fast contract, and the states are the only stakeholders in this contract. Integral in contract law, the stakeholders or states possess the inherent authority to exercise oversight and enforcement over their contract. This means they can audit the federal government by the contract, and with republic review, they can enforce compliance to their constitution. Any single state can perform the audit, but when states begin to unite in the auditing process, this is what is referred to as republic review. Please read my argument for republic review as well as my description of the Republic Review model on reclaimingtherepublic.org. We even have a graphic flowchart that shows you how Republic Review works. If you want to learn more, contact me on Facebook or send me an email. Thank you. As a reminder, if you have any questions or comments, we have a 24-hour comment line, 425-270-5416. Okay, so as we move forward, or plow forward, we're going to actually get into the next day. And so this is kind of where we, you know, dive into this new discussion on the new day. Because they literally leave, they adjourn, they come back the next day. And it's a Saturday, by the way. And they're going to take up this issue of admitting states into the union. As we saw in the final words by Mr. Wilson, that maintaining equality and the equal footing doctrine becomes more and more a prevailing consideration. Because, again, like I kind of referred to this, that when we look at these ideas, as they were throwing out all these different ideas, many of them died on the table. I mean, they couldn't even take a step before, oh, there's a problem with that. And so I would think that these men didn't personalize. I'm hoping, but the natural tendency of people, and actually, let me ask you this, Tammy. Have you ever dealt with anybody that shoots down your ideas all the time?
Oh, sure.
And what is the obvious solution? Have better ideas, right?
Yeah.
There you go. Because most people, they get all upset because that person just keeps shooting down my ideas. And they personalize that. Well, the solution is coming up with better ideas. Give it more thought. As a matter of fact, I'm going to say, you know, a term, you know, in baseball, you know, if you're playing in the game or whatever it is you're doing, you know, have an idea, like driving a car, have an idea as to what you're going to be doing when you come to the stop sign, when you come to the stop, you know, have an idea out there, like a baseball player who's in dreamland. The next thing the ball comes to them and they, shoot, what do I do? Because they're not watching. Where does the ball need to go? They're not thinking. And so if we think and we start really using our intelligence power of, you know, working an idea through a model, well, what about this? What about this? What about this? Eventually, our ideas get better and better, right? Mm-hmm. And I think that these men were pretty, I don't want to say thick-skinned, but I want to say that most of them weren't really taking offense because their ideas were being shot down. I think that those few people that were engaged in this had either an agenda, because they were obligated to protect this institution that was not going to be surrendered, i.e. slavery, was the real agenda that they could not get out of this convention in the Constitution. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so this is why these different ideas were coming down the pike to try to suit these other agendas. In other words, the adversary or the contrarian was constantly driving things sideways because they wanted to protect something that they shouldn't have.
Mm-hmm.
There we go. Okay, so Mr. Gary, let's go ahead. This is the 14th of Saturday. go ahead. Admission of new states.
Okay. Mr. Gary wished before the question should be put that the attention of the House might be turned to the dangers apprehended from Western states. He was for admitting them on liberal terms, but not for putting ourselves into their hands. They will, if they acquire power, like all men, abuse it. They will oppress commerce and drain our wealth into the Western country. To guard against these consequences, he thought it necessary to limit the number of new states to be admitted into the Union in such a manner that they should never be able to outnumber the Atlantic states. He accordingly moved that in order to secure the liberties of the states already confederated, a number of representatives in the first branch of the states, which shall hereafter be established, shall never exceed in number the representatives from such of the states as shall accede to this confederation.
Now, see, here's an interesting thing. So what do you take out of this? Is his idea to be open to allowing, you know, all the states to, you know, come into the union, or, you know, we need to proceed with caution and, you know, have limitations?
I mean, he wanted to remain in power.
Right. Thought it necessary to limit the number of new states to be admitted into the Union in such a manner that they should never be able to outnumber the Atlantic states. In other words, why is Eldridge Gary of Massachusetts trying to protect states joining the Union, or, you know, protect Massachusetts? Because I don't think you have to be brilliant to be able to see the mass of land that Massachusetts is a small landlocked state.
Yeah.
And to the west of them is what?
A vast amount.
Yeah. But I mean, so if we look at, because if you go to a map of the United States, right? And we look at all of the things that are next to them. And let me do that because I want to make sure that I'm looking at this properly. So if you look at Massachusetts, Massachusetts is on the seaboard and they have a good coastline, but what is directly to the west of them? New York. New York is right there, abutted again to their eastern border. To the north is Vermont and New Hampshire, and to the south is Connecticut. And so when we look at Massachusetts, there's no more land. They have locked themselves into the state that they are because other states have formed around them. And so New Hampshire was, you know, forming Maine. And you got to remember that Massachusetts is kind of a nation that was created with pig-headed people. And I guess that's offensive. Let's just say people that were very closed-minded, and because they were Puritans. They demanded strict observance of their doctrine. And so to the south of them, Connecticut was created because somebody wanted to deviate the doctrine. I forget the name, but I think it was a woman that was actually starting to proselyte what they considered, you know, blasphemy and heresy to their doctrine. So they kicked her out, and maybe that might have been to the north. I don't know. But bottom line, both of the states to the north and south were created because they're what was being professed and what the doctrines that were coming out of these people was unacceptable, you know, and kicked them out of the state. They were very intolerant. Mm-hmm. Okay. I guess, you know, in a roundabout way, that's what I'm basically saying, because they were so myopic and focused on, instead of being open to a free concept of religious doctrine, you know, and having the freedom of religion, they were one of the few states that had a very strict observance. And their history proved that, because they created other states because of their intolerance. Make sense?
Absolutely.
Okay, so
I've been moving out.
Okay, so there you go. So they have people that are very happy. They become very successful. at this point in time, the life expectancy of Massachusetts was better than anybody else in the Union. They were living to 70 years of age. That was the average life expectancy of an adult. They still had infantile deaths that were still way out of control because germs and those types of things we just didn't understand. And that took a while for America to overcome that, which is one of the reasons why, you know, everybody was having lots of kids, because they had no idea if the child would survive the first year, two or three, you know, because at some point in time, something would happen and they'd die. And anyway, as we kind of look, Mr. Gary is starting to realize that that's it for them. They have no more land to develop other than what they've got. There's no future for them. And when we look at the almost the infinite amount of land to the west, wow, look at how many states could come into the Union. Obviously, the people that have these hard, fast paradigms. Now, the southern states, they didn't have those limitations. From Georgia all the way up to Pennsylvania, most all of these states, other than Maryland and Delaware, because they were landlocked, but Pennsylvania, Virginia, the Carolinas, and Georgia were states that would stretch as a stripe under the original design of the Articles of Confederation. These states would actually stripe out to the Pacific Ocean. There'd be just a band going all the way across. And in so doing, they saw this opportunity of how these states would have so much power and control. And Massachusetts limited themselves. In other words, these are the consequences of how you choose to live. Mm-hmm. And now there's an agenda that is actually out being played out here, where the delegates of Massachusetts are literally trying, or at least Gary is trying to preserve this perceived superiority over all these new states coming into the Union, which is why he's doing this. So Mr. King seconded that motion. Now, Rufus King, he's a delegate from Massachusetts as well. Mr. Sherman from Connecticut, they're another landlocked state. Go ahead. What's Mr. Sherman say?
Mr. Sherman thought there was no probability that the number of future states would exceed that of the existing states. If the event should ever happen, it was too remote to be taken into consideration at this time. Besides, we are providing for our posterity, for our children and our grandchildren, who would be as likely to be citizens of new Western states as of the old states. On this consideration alone, we ought to make no such discrimination as was proposed by the motion.
Okay, Mr. Gary defends himself. Go ahead.
Mr. Gary, if some of our children should remove, others will stay behind, and he thought it incumbent on us to provide for their interests. There was a rage of immigration from the eastern states to the western country, and he did not wish those remaining behind to be at the mercy of the immigrants. Besides, foreigners are resorting to that country, and it is uncertain what turn things may take there. On the question for agreeing to the motion of Mr. Gary, it passed in the negative.
In other words, it didn't carry because there weren't enough votes to carry it. So, they successfully had a vote, but they didn't buy into what Gary wanted. Right. So, okay. So as we kind of go a little bit further down, and actually we're going to go all the way down towards the end of the day where Mr. Strong has spoken. And now we're actually going to be looking at what Mr. Madison says regarding admission of new states. It's the same day, right? Okay, so what does Mr. Madison say?
Mr. Madison expressed his apprehensions that if the proper foundation of government was destroyed by substituting inequality in place of a proportional representation, no proper superstructure would be raised. If the small states really wish for a government armed with the powers necessary to secure their liberties and to enforce obedience to the larger members as well as on themselves, he could not help thinking them extremely mistaken in their means. He reminded them of the consequences of laying the existing confederation on improper principles. All the principal parties to its compilation joined immediately in mutilating and fettering the government in such a manner that it has disappointed every hope placed on it. He appealed to the doctrine and arguments used by themselves on a former occasion. It had very properly observed by Mr. Patterson that representation was an expedient by which the meeting of the people themselves was rendered unnecessary, and that the representatives ought therefore to bear a proportion to the votes which their constituents, if convened, would respectively have. Was not this remark as applicable to one branch of the representation as to others? But it had been said that the government would in its operation be partly federal, partly national, that although in the latter respect the representatives of the people ought to be in proportion to the people, yet in the former they ought to be according to the number of states. If there was any solidity to this distinction, he was ready to abide by it. If there was none, it ought to be abandoned. In all cases where the general government is to act on the people, let the people be represented and the votes be proportional. In all cases where their government is to act on the states as such, in like manner as Congress now act on them, let the states be represented and the votes be equal.
Okay. So right there, he's literally going down this path of pointing to these different advantages. I don't think at this point in time, because we've yet to see the Constitution really starting to take form, it doesn't actually happen until the beginning of August. So what he's doing is he's actually creating this huge argument of having what we would call checks and balances that exist within Congress, that this concept of a check, that the population, the representation in the House based on population, and be equally apportioned against the Senate, which would actually be representation of the state legislatures, which would be equal. That is where there would be this check and balance, because when issues would be coming from the House, like one of the things we know that come out of this Constitution is that all bills that require money, they have to originate out of the House. So in other words, if the House really wants to spend money on something that, you know, like whatever, that's within their power and authority, they actually have to make a deal with the state legislature to be able to do that, right? Because that's mm-hmm. where their suffrage is. But keep in mind that they're framing a government that is, at this point in time, incapable of real-time governing. In other words, when they talk about suffrage of the people and suffrage of the state legislature, people are chosen to go and represent them as they think best. Now, as we've improved governing over time, it has been, the improvement has come from the constituents of those who are, you know, being represented. In other words, those representing the constituents, they actually listen to and they follow those people. That's how we've improved this government. But what's happened is because we actually have a system that allows them to ignore their constituents at their own peril, they've actually created a system where we've actually become so frustrated because we don't know what to do. We don't know how to obtain our suffrage. We're going back to the importance of the state legislature suffrage in the Senate and the fact that they could actually grab and take full control over that Senate. They would be able to cut the chains and controls of the globalist over the U.S. Senate like that, just like that. All they had to do was say, look, you will vote this way, and if you do not, we're unanimous as a body. As the state legislature of this sovereign state and as our representatives in that U.S. Senate, you are required, according to Article 5, to ensure our suffrage will be equal and representative of this body. And therefore, if you fail to give us suffrage, we will remove you. Because the obligation of the suffrage of the Senate, the suffrage in the Senate, is to be the state legislatures. That was protected. And so we're seeing this actually play out. And when we go through these notes, because they don't really talk too much, they actually do talk about the Senate and the House of Representatives a lot in the ratification debate. But the fact is, it is constantly laid out and consistently justified that those senators are obligated to abide by the state legislature's wishes of their representation. As I have said, I've opened a real can of worms to say that the state legislatures could actually amend Article 1, Section 3, where the establishes the Senate, and basically changes the senators to a simple proxy person. In other words, that person is to sit there and receive minimum wage, if by any reason that the state legislature cannot participate in a live vote in the U.S. Senate, then that proxy will cast that vote based on the previous knowledge of exactly how that state legislature wanted. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
Because the U.S. Senate is the body of representing these state legislatures.
Right.
Therefore, we do have the means, and the framers could have easily done this. And they understood technology of communications and computers and video conferencing and phones and the way we now have the flow of information. Again, folks, we're at a point, in progress of technology and so forth, where we're dangerously close to the Creator as a society. And evil people are doing very evil things. But the point is that these state legislatures could literally just quickly, like this, demand an amendment to the U.S. Senate or that portion of Article 1, where the state legislatures would now have full control over every vote cast in that Senate moving forward.
So would they just vote and then the U.S. senators vote them?
Yeah, so when a bill came up, Each state house would have equal suffrage. The only reason that they had two senators, the only reason and purpose for having two senators was for continuity, right? Because they wanted to make sure that there would never be a wholesale change in the Senate, because understanding the nuances that these men had to deal with regarding trade and treaties and these, overarching things that the Senate had very unique responsibilities, that goes away, because now the state legislatures could easily have and would always have that continuity.
Yeah.
Okay. So the point is that when we really look at utilizing today's technology to provide a better representative government, having real-time governing is always better, because the appropriate decisions could always be the appropriate votes and decisions would always be cast and made. And I'm telling you that the state legislatures are literally sitting on their hands, and they're being gagged, and they're hogtied. They are being fully constrained because they have no suffrage in that Senate, and it's been that way for well over a century. And this is why we're in the situation we're in. Because the Senate actually was responsible for allowing an abhorrent treaty to be passed, admitting us into the UN. I'll bet you anything, if the state legislatures at that point in time had the ability, they would have shut down the Senate just that fast and said, no way, we're not admitting ourselves into a body to be regulated by a foreign government. Are you kidding?
Yeah.
That power doesn't exist in the Constitution. Where do you get off doing that? I'm telling you, folks, taking back the Senate and real-time representation is critical. And we have the same ability to do the same thing in the House by actually getting the proper apportionment going at 30 right now. I honestly think we can go down to 10 or 20. You have to look. I'm really in a rat hole, and it's filled with water, and I'm just swimming. I'm backstroking. Just imagine me casually, because I'm enjoying this. Because if you really see that when we govern, New Hampshire is a ideal model of self-governing, because those people don't get paid. It is a responsibility and is cast upon you. And
really?
Yes.
I did not know that.
They don't get paid, or I should say it's a stipend. They have 400 legislators in the House. Let me pull up my state government, and let me see here. A legislative control. Where is the legislative control? I'll have to open it up. But when we look at the state government, state legislative control 2024. Okay, so when we look at New Hampshire, I'm going to go to New Hampshire, which is a red state. They have in the House of Representatives 400 representatives. In the Senate, they have 24.
Wow.
Because they probably had 24 counties in New Hampshire. Now, I'm stepping on a limb. Is GR right? Because I just took a guess at that, right? Counties of New Hampshire. There we go. Counties of New Hampshire map. And I'm pulling it up. And actually, they've got lots of little counties. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. They may have 24 counties, because it looks like, as I'm looking at it, the counties and townships and so forth are subdivided because, yeah, they only have 10. Maybe 11. And so each county would get two representatives. So that's why they had so few.
Yeah.
So, and they may have been merging and playing since all of this, but bottom line, if the House of Representatives would broke down to 10,000, then, and this is how we could actually create, and so one of the paradigms that we get into when we look at the Constitution is that they did not want people being able to make themselves rich by governing. So they wanted to make sure that if you're in the federal government, you could not be on the dole or on a payroll of a state or local government. You could only do this one job. I believe that at the local representation, we're out of time now, but I believe at the local representation, we could change that. And it's all about data and it's all about information. So I promise that we will pick this up in our next tomorrow session, because that's tomorrow, and we will kind of bring this forward so that you can kind of see how real-time governing would be so powerful and would be best. I'm G.R. Mobley. We're Reclaiming the Republic. We need your help. God bless. If you've listened to my show, Reclaiming the Republic, then you should understand that the Constitution is neither a living document nor a noble guide to governance. In accordance to Article 7, the Constitution is a hard, fast contract, and the states are the only stakeholders in this contract. Integral in contract law, the stakeholders or states possess the inherent authority to exercise oversight and enforcement over their contract. This means they can audit the federal government by the contract, and with republic review, they can enforce compliance to their constitution. Any single state can perform the audit, but when states begin to unite in the auditing process, process. This is what is referred to as republic review. Please read my argument for republic review as well as my description of the republic review model on reclaimingtherepublic.org. We even have a graphic flowchart that shows you how republic review works. If you want to learn more, contact me on Facebook or send me an email. Thank you.